Where does the great upgrade to America's infrastructure start? The Trump administration says air traffic control. From Marketplace in New York, I'm David Brancaccio. This is the week the Trump administration pushes for spending to fix bridges, tunnels, railroad tracks that could fail, expand airports and highways. How the proposed $1 trillion in infrastructure spending gets paid for isn't clear, but the White House is signaling that borrowing for parts of this is okay. Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman is here with some context about moving air traffic control to the private sector. Mitchell?
Right. You know, this is got echoes of another Republican president, Ronald Reagan, when he fired the air traffic controllers in a labor dispute. This privatization plan for air traffic control has actually been kicking around for a while. It's similar to how Canada and Europe do it. Basically, you take the current system and its 30,000 employees out of the Federal Aviation Administration, put it under a new nonprofit corporation that would impose user fees on air travel to fund operations, and most importantly, improvements to air travel.
So this would still be, even though it's been tried elsewhere, a complex undertaking, and we hope any result would be safe as passengers.
Right. You know, there is widespread agreement among airlines, especially also safety experts and lawmakers, that the computers and systems we're using now are antiquated. They're slowing down travel even as the skies get more crowded. What is thought to be needed is just a major investment to shift from ground-based radar to satellites. Then air traffic controllers could presumably figure out more efficient flight plans and landing paths. You know, there are some concerns here, especially rural state lawmakers. They're worried that all the investment would go to the big city hub airports. You can imagine the JFK's, LAX, Hartsfield, O'Hare, instead of smaller airports, Great Falls, Montana, or Harrisburg, Pennsylvania.
All right. Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman, thank you. Let's check the live market numbers here. The 100 share index in London is down 0.3%. The German market is closed for a holiday. Stock index futures for the U.S. are down, with the Dow future down 11 points. Congress is back at work today after a Memorial Day recess. The Senate's digging into health care. And on the House side, there's a vote planned on what's dubbed the Financial Choice Act. That's a Republican plan to roll back many of the Dodd-Frank reforms put in after the great financial collapse. Marketplace's Kimberly Adams has more.
Dodd-Frank was a big, sweeping piece of legislation passed in the wake of the financial crisis. The Choice Act goes after the parts Republicans dislike most. Sam Batkins researches regulatory policy at the right-leaning American Action Forum.
For example, removing too big to fail, the Volcker Rule, the Durbin Amendment, which is a swipe fee rule, the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau is going to be reformed.
Advocates are already lining up to keep the CFPB as it is, and some legal and financial experts are warning that with so much bank consolidation since the crisis, banks are still too big to fail.
Dodd-Frank was meant as an antidote to the big banks getting bigger.
Mayor Sabaradaran is a law professor at the University of Georgia.
And what the Choice Act does is repeal the provisions that were aimed at those big banks.
The Financial Choice Act is expected to pass the House, but the Senate, probably not. In Washington, I'm Kimberly Adams for Marketplace.
Hi, David Brancaccio, stepping out of my anchorman role for a second. Marketplace is here because these days I think it's essential to have an independent source exploring how the economy really works, not just for the market participants or the financial geniuses, but for everyone. Your support keeps our kind of reporting coming, and it is especially vital now at the end of our fiscal year. If you could, visit marketplace.org/donate to contribute and to keep us on the beat. Thank you. We owe $1.4 trillion in student loans. This pushes some students to go for jobs that pay more upon graduation rather than building dream careers that might take more time to pay off. For instance, farming. Christopher Husted from KBIA in Missouri reports.
In central Missouri, Liz Graysneck pulls weeds from a bed of recently planted spinach with help from her 4-year-old daughter, Sylvia.
That guy's the spinach. We don't want to take that one up, okay?
Today, Graysneck sells organic produce to nearby restaurants and at farmers markets. But 8 years ago, before she started Happy Hollow Farm, she was on track to earn a PhD in plant breeding. She decided then that instead of studying plants, she wanted to grow them.
The mortgage aside, it costs a hell of a lot of money to start a farm.
For a small, organic farm like Graysneck's, she needed close to $100,000 for the first 2 years. So, just like many other business owners, she thought she could go to a bank, take out a loan, and buy some property. Well, not so easy on a grad student salary.
No bank was going to give me a loan at making $8 an hour. Like, no way. And owing, you know, $30,000-some in student loans. So that's why I got a job.
After graduating, Graznick ended up deferring her student loan payments, interning on several farms, and then working full-time at a garden center so she could save up enough money to launch her dream farm. And she did, 6 years later. Who is going to grow the food in the future? It's a question often asked in the Midwest as the average age of farmers ticks upward.
I think it really is an increasing concern.
Kevin Moore is an agricultural economist at the University of Missouri. He teaches a class for students called Returning to the Farm. The students crunch the numbers to figure out a business plan and the economic reality of what it will take to farm successfully, whether it's a small operation or a larger, more conventional farm.
The capital requirement of agriculture has continued to increase, which makes it more difficult for a young person to get in.
And not only to get a farm started, but to build one that's efficient and competitive enough to survive. In Columbia, Missouri, I'm Christopher Husted for Marketplace.
And what could become the biggest defamation case ever in the U.S. begins today in South Dakota. It's about so-called food libel. Beef Products Incorporated is suing ABC News for covering what some call pink slime. The industry prefers lean, finely textured beef in which fatty beef trimmings are put into centrifuges to remove the fat. The industry is using the Trump-era term fake news. ABC's lawyers claim it was the opposite, saying the network's coverage was, quote, real news of interest to consumers who didn't know this product was in their ground beef. Under food disparagement laws, triple damages could be in place here, up to $6 billion for ABC. This is the Marketplace Morning Report from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.